Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast for February 17th, 2020. Apparently today is a national holiday.
Yeah, this is Washington's birthday.
I didn't know that. I mean, the day. Children didn't have any school.
I'm surprised we had such a big turnout on Sunday since.
If I'd known it was
usually it's a 3-day,
it's a 4-day weekend.
Oh yeah, so usually everyone's gone and we are depressed. The day after, because I was depressed. The service started out and they're like, what, 20 people in the sanctuary, and most of them were in the choir. And by the time the sermon rolled around, we had a huge turnout.
Yeah.
We had one of the bigger turnouts yesterday than we ever have.
It's hard to get to church from downstairs.
Yeah. And there were lots of people in the building. Upstairs. They were just down in the parish hall, or people now, like, if you come to our church late, I'm very happy that you come to our church.
Don't worry about it. Just come whenever.
Come to our
church.
But it is true that every Sunday I feel extremely depressed for the first 15, 20 minutes of the service because people are still wandering in. But that's also because we have people coming in from like a long way. We have people coming in.
Well, no, those people are on time. If you're coming from 2 hours away or whatever, an hour away, you have to leave so early in the morning that you...
Yeah,
they're on time or early. Whereas people who come, even including you, from 3 seconds away, driving down the highway, it's really hard to blow in on time. You think?
I for the 8 o'clock service, I leave the house at 7:42.
It's so freakish. I'm so happy that we take.
It's a 10-minute drive
now, because when we all went together, it was the worst 5 minutes of my life.
It's a 10-minute drive
to church every week.
And I'll admit, sometimes I break.
Yeah, you just blow past the police.
Because it's ridiculous. At 8 o'clock on Sunday morning, they have actual red lights and not blinking red lights or blinking yellow lights. It's absurd because no one's out there.
No one's trying to rush to church except for like one person.
So it makes me angry with the law.
Well, then you have to stand up and preach to all your congregation about being law-abiding, and it makes you
right. Well, don't
hypocrite.
Do what I do. Do what I say.
Now I drive separately from you, and I go in a regular way. This is not the subject of today's podcast.
No.
We did actually have some things. We were instructed to talk about something that's pretty great.
Yeah.
We sent a fantastic clip of something ridiculous, and we are going to talk about it. And then we have another news article that's pretty awful, too. So today should be... Today should fulfill all your hopes and dreams for this podcast.
Yes, so we're basically, how would we describe the topics upon which we're going to hold forth?
Well, it's not going to be deep. We're not going to say anything like...
We're going to be talking about worship, about preaching, and about thruples.
Thruples. Because it's not like... I mean, there is deep stuff we could talk about out there. I have read some of it on the internet, but why would we do that when we have something so easy, such low-hanging fruit that we barely have to lift up? Like, you don't even have to lift your arm. It's
right.
Like the fruit falls into your lap. So, okay, I think we should do the fantastic clip that we were sent first.
So this is from Church on the Glades, or Church by the Glades, and this is... If you follow Chris Roseborough or listen to his show, he always this is a common feature on his sermon reviews. They're a common Church in the Glades. Church by the Glades is one of the places he goes quite often to show
so
you how
things.
Not to preach and how not to do church. It's funny. So it's one of the biggest churches in the country, but it's also one of the, I think this is the dinosaur church that we did last year.
Oh, okay.
In this every summer they'll have the movie sermons expositing whatever film is very popular at the time. And it's very, very much a show.
When you say big, what does that mean? Like it's one of the bigger churches.
Like lots of people go to it.
Like thousands?
Thousands, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So thousands of people wake up on Sunday morning and go to see this.
Right. And so it's a massive concert, kind of a show, kind of a you know, depending, it's themed every Sunday.
It makes me despair overall.
I think they did. I mean, if this is the right same church, I think one of their most recent themed sermons was Victoria's Secrets.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
So, they, you know, they kind of tease it that way, of course, but then it's not like really scantily clad women. It's the secret is Jesus or something. I don't know.
Oh, my word. Oh, my word. We should.
If I'm getting the church right, this is the same one that is causing all the controversy and there's many controversies in the Southern Baptist Convention, but this is the one that.
Is this a Southern Baptist church?
That was sending a female pastor there to do music. And
this church?
I think this is the church, I think. Oh. So I don't want to be.
Well, we're not talking about that.
We're not going to dip our feet into that.
Southern Baptists to sort themselves out before we weigh
They should
in.
All become Anglican. That would make them.
I know.
That would solve so many problems.
So many problems for them.
All right.
So.
Shall we listen to this clip?
I'm going to link this because part of the extraordinariness of it is the visuals.
Yeah, you got to see him. He's wearing like a green, parachute pants. I mean,
they
remind me of like the 80s.
It's really unattractive. Surprisingly unattractive.
All right.
And then he's got like a
and he's talking about guacamole and he's wearing green. So
is that the right clip?
Yeah, is it?
Okay.
Ready?
Fresh Market, if you love spicy, Fresh Market spicy guacamole. I have some every single day of my life. Jalapenos, jalapeno juice, and evidently crack cocaine because I'm very addicted to it. And listen, it is so good. I have a guacamole egg white omelet all the time.
It's really, like, his voice is really loud.
Yeah.
Like, it's jangling around in the back of my head in a really unfortunate way.
But he's walking around the stage or whatever it is, like a comedian might do. He's, you know, there's no pulpit.
Okay. Also, the way that he's talking, the kind of manner, it's like weird Christian culture. Because if you know people who are not in sort of Christianish culture, they don't actually talk like this. This is a new, not new, but like it's a developing brand of Christianese kind of pattern of speech. That's
well, no, it's like the Christian's imagination of what people in the world must want to talk like. It's a little bit like a guy trying to figure out women who doesn't know women,
right?
And making. Right. He thinks he knows what women want, and so he tries
to do that.
And their women are looking at him like, "What are you?"
Yeah,
that's inevitably the way it comes across when the church tries to attract the world by being the world, because we don't know. We're all like 10 years behind figuring things out.
The problem is though, like, it's not attracting the church either. Like, you're not really doing church here. No. You're not doing church, and you're not attracting the world. I mean, you're attracting some people, I guess, thousands of people, which, again, just makes me feel like crying. But,
okay. Good. I have a guacamole egg white omelet all the time with turkey. Lisa Wright every single day. And the only issue I have, if you're here from Fresh Market, the packaging. The product is great. The packaging is wonky. Like, every time you try to open it, it tears. It doesn't reseal very well, which guacamole, Stevie, quickly, goes brown if you don't reseal it well. But Fresh Market, like 6 months ago, y'all changed the package. The package now is a good package. It's user-friendly. It reseals nicely. So now you have great guacamole, a great product, and an effective package. You might have noticed we're not the normal church. People walk in and go, like, wow, I'm not sure I get it.
I would notice that.
What do you mean by normal? I mean, I feel like this is all too normal.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things they say when you adopt the Rick Warren purpose-driven church model, which is what this is. It's just a further development of it, which is where you're trying to grab the attention of the world, bring them in by being very, very entertainishness and sermons having to do with, you know, real life practical things. When you do that, one of the things that we'll say is, oh, we're not like your mama's church, or we're not like
your grandma's church.
In fact, you're a lot like all the other churches that do exactly the same thing. You're not much different than the other,
and it's kind of dated now.
Yeah, and in fact, you're like the world but more boring.
Yeah, I mean, because if you go on, I mean, I've been watching Twitter arguments about people accusing each other of stuff, and they're not talking about guacamole packaging. Like, even the people who are, the whole conversation about having to be vegan and how hard it is to be vegan, I can't remember where I was reading that, is more interesting than this. Even the very trite stuff of the world is more interesting than this conversation about the packaging of your guacamole at Fresh Market and see, what kind of omelet you eat for breakfast. Like,
yeah.
If I walked in and that was the beginning of the sermon, I would have run. I would have, like, leapt up out of my seat and run swiftly and gone for a quiet coffee somewhere.
But see, he's using this as a segue to defend their churchmanship.
Right.
So the guacamole, actually, the packaging for the guacamole is like their entertainment stuff.
This is just like the Jesus is my
So he's expositing
banana.
He's expositing their
worship style.
Their worship style.
Again, though, worship is a bit of a stretch. Right, okay. I wouldn't use that word.
So yeah, it's true.
The LEDs and the themes and creativity, and y'all play music that I hear on iTunes and on the radio. Is that okay? Maybe this church has kind of watered down the gospel. No. The gospel is the guacamole. Guacamole, by the way, is a superfood. It's really good for you. The gospel is spiritual, spicy guacamole. All we've done is we tweaked the packaging a little bit. Other churches don't.
Now, it's fat. What's interesting here is, and I think that the other article that
groaning.
We were.
I want everyone to hear me groan.
So what an interesting way to think about worship. It's the packaging. It's just packaging. It doesn't have anything to do with the actual content, right? So I think
it's like super Gnostic.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't matter. That's what it's essentially what you're saying is the packaging has no impact on the stuff inside the package. So you can
Which
is true with food.
He said the packaging really didn't matter because when you have bad packaging,
right.
The guacamole goes bad. So his own example is pretty garbage. Like, if you have bad packaging, the product itself becomes, you know, corrupted and useless. So, your example is wrong.
The shape of the packaging should be determined by what the we shouldn't be talking about packaging. This is the gospel. The worship of the church should reflect the truth that you're preaching and teaching. It shouldn't be something different to attract people in to hear you. It should be the same thing. The ethos of worship is that you pray what you believe. Prayer shapes
it's
belief.
Not a package either. Like,
yeah, it's part of the gospel.
It's the very idea that you would start to talk about packaging is really weird because it's like when you go to a movie, is that what you think you're doing is just like the movie is a package for something else? Or are you like watching a movie?
Well, in this way of doing worship, it's about marketing. Remember the whole idea is you study the demographics around your area, you pick a chosen demographic that you want to reach, and you got to figure out what those people like, what kind of music they like. It's just like starting a new restaurant or a new store. What kind of music do the people like? What kind of atmosphere do the people like? How do they dress? And then you match that.
What is the economic status of the people you want to come?
And then you match that. And that's, if you package it well enough, they'll come in and then they'll listen to you preach. And they'll be so attracted by the packaging.
What's interesting, though, is if your restaurant is really garbage, like if your food is bad, all this demographic research you did was a waste of time.
Well, that's what he's trying to say, is that it's not there because they have the real guac.
They have the real guac. So.
They have the real gospel package. I don't think the way you package something is incidental. I think it has to flow out of what the gospel is. This is praying. I said a minute ago shapes believing. So if you're telling people that Jesus is God's son who's come to live who came to live the perfect life, die for your sins and be raised again, and you must trust him and believe in him, but everything surrounding that message is about you getting your groove on or about your emotions or about your you being entertained, that's a contradiction. That that the message then is contradicted by everything else in the service. And you go away, maybe having heard the gospel, but maybe, because often it's about five tips to better coaching style. But you go away, maybe having heard the gospel, but you're being trained over time that really worship is about you being entertained.
The consequence of this is seen in other realms. This is maybe a little bit off topic, but all the people who have been saying for the last couple of years that the gospel is not sufficient when you have bigger conversations like race. Yeah, that's actually true. If this is what you think the gospel is, you can't go any deeper than this guacamole package. You can't even deal with basic things like human suffering or illness or depression. You can't deal with big intractable human problems of any kind, politics, nothing, if this is your idea of the gospel. So when people say you can't just keep preaching you can't just keep preaching the gospel, that's not going to be sufficient, they're right if this is what it is. And tragically, I think this is what it is. For too many people, like thousands of people are going here.
Well,
we haven't heard it.
Gospel, but that doesn't mean he doesn't preach it. I mean, but we should leave open the possibility that he actually articulates the gospel in.
Yeah, but so, what is he articulating? He's probably going to be, you need to come to Jesus and be saved,
mm-hmm.
and your life will be all spicy.
You'll be like the
guac.
You'll
be transformed by the guac. And so, yeah, go back to your little, McMansion and feel awesome about that, because Jesus is your guac. We haven't finished the clip.
Don't do it like us, and that is fine. That'd be boring and redundant. We feel called by God just to kind of tweak the packaging a little bit to make it kind of user-friendly, especially for your friends who haven't been to church very much, so the package and the product both connect. So when people say, what kind of church do you go to? Oh, I go to a spicy guacamole church, what I go to, right?
And there it is.
Yeah.
No, the package and the message don't connect in this case, because the gospel is not guacamole. Like, you're actually not connecting the package, the idea that you think you need a package.
I mean, but you can kind of hear the assumption though in there that you have friends who just haven't gone to church for a while, and if they just heard or saw this new way of doing church, they'd be turned back on, they'd come back into church. That assumes a cultural place where we no longer are, where people are basically friendly toward toward Christianity, wanting to go to church, and just they're just bored by the old traditions, and those need to be swept away so that they can be brought in. I don't think that's true anymore. I don't think people have any idea. I don't think people are looking for.
No one is looking for. It's not morally acceptable to go to church up here anywhere. Where is this church?
It's in the Glades. It's in Florida.
Florida. Right. Like, do people? Right. If you dress up and go to church in Florida, do people smile upon you in the morning? Because up here, if you're dressed up and you walk into Weiss before church, everybody glares at you. Like, they can tell where you're going, and they look at you like you're an evil, bad person. So all the capital is gone, and there's nothing to be gained by going.
Right. And that's good, because that will ultimately separate the wheat from the tares. Mm. People who are in church just because it was a cultural thing, ultimately, as time goes on, are not going to be able to, or won't continue going. But see, now that leads the question, what do you do if your church culture is one that says, okay, we've got to attract the world. We've got to attract the world. We've got to bring more people in. And so what can we do to do that? So if that's your primary ethic, then most likely what you're going to do is not touch on those topics that turn people off. So the exclusivity of Christ, the sexuality issues, those kinds of things are going to be so far from your preaching that because you got to keep them in.
You got to keep paying for all that equipment.
Yeah.
And the big guacamole thing in the background. And
well,
like,
and it just
occurred. His outfit, his shoes looked really expensive. This guy would have been good for the pastor sneaker meme or whatever.
Right.
Of 20 minutes ago.
Yeah. So it just encourages this idea that the individual coming in who does perhaps like this style and who does like the preaching that this guy's doing will be communicated to that person that your preferences, your likes and dislikes need to be met by the worship experience and by the preacher. And so you're just creating little independent Christians who aren't wedded to a community, who aren't wedded to necessarily even to Christ until Christ can be presented to him in a way that's acceptable.
Also, you starve out the people who really are Christian and who really do need to grow.
Right.
Because your sermon on Sunday morning is not about Jesus or how to live faithfully to Jesus or who Jesus is, or
well, it might be. I mean, we don't want to say that it can't be, but it's just not. There's you're going to avoid certain things, right?
But you're not going to go very deep. Like your initial illustration is a guacamole package,
right? You can't go deep.
You can't go deep because you've got to. There's got to be time for the music, light display, the video announcements.
Well, again, but it's not even that. I mean, because you know. You could spend, most churches do 40 minutes music or 30 minutes music, 30 minutes preaching. So you could have the time to do an exposition. It's just that would defeat the purpose of the music and display because no one wants to sit through that.
Right. Nobody wants to actually sit through the actual sermon. There was something else I was going to say. It's not your grandmother's church. What is really tragic about this is that this has been this sort of basic idea of church for so long across this great land that it is your grandmother's church. I mean, it's more ramped up. Your grandmother probably didn't have guacamole as the main sermon illustration, but she did have 20 minutes of singing, 50 minutes of sermon. The offering is taken.
I do remember going to your grandmother's church.
Yeah. And
it was kind of like this, except smaller. It was.
Yeah. They went to a band church like this because they were looking for good. They found one that had pretty good preaching, but they grew up like the word and the sacrament, the sort of form of the service, which is very ancient, had went away for the vast majority of Americans a long time ago. And so people really are doing the thing that they've known to do for now generations. It is your grandmother's church and it's not sufficient. You should leave it behind and go find word and sacrament, church discipline, proper preaching. Like, leave that behind and go find your great, 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 great grandmother's church. Because it's old. It's a tired and ineffective trope.
You should feel when you go into a church on a Sunday morning, you should feel like you're entering another place, another nation, another country. It shouldn't be, it should not be familiar to you. It shouldn't be comfortable all the time because you're walking into God's, a place where Christ is and his king, he reigns. He's the king there. So it should be very different than the kingdom of the world. And the church should make no apologies for that. We shouldn't sit there, we're sorry for, this liturgy is very difficult for you. We're sorry.
Yeah, I don't know why you would say you're sorry. And we're not like those other churches where they sing hymns and stuff. Like, we're going to be defensive about...
Yeah. This is not our show. This is about Christ. And we can trace liturgical... worship all the way back to the very beginning, second century, Justin Martyr describing how the shape of the service, and it's very much like what seems to have happened is the early Christians in the Apostolic Church took the synagogue service, which was comprised of readings from the law and the prophets, wrote prayers, and then a sermon by the rabbi, or a exposition of one of the texts, or all of the texts by a rabbi, and then tacked onto the end of that, the Eucharist, communion. So you had, all the way back into the apostolic era, church that was intended to communicate in the prayer and in the readings and in the sermon and the communion, that you are citizens of a different country. You are listening to,
this isn't your living room.
Yeah. Yeah.
This isn't your light show.
Right.
This is a place where God has decided to come in a particular way to be with his people. And it doesn't belong to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I lost track of what I was going
to say. Well, that's a relief, I think, to the conscience. I mean, it's a relief to not have to walk in and say, how do I like this? How do I like that? What do I feel about this? What do I feel about this song? Are my emotions being keyed up by this song or not? It takes the onus off of all of that, because instead of the self-conscious, am I feeling the right way? Am I getting what I think I need to be okay for the next week? Am I getting my fill up of the right music and encouraging self-help talks? No, you come and let the one who knows you better than you know you do his work through his words and through his sacrament.
It is there was two posts. I think I wanted to, there was a great post in Ponder Anew about giving you permission to leave your church if your church had slowly, has slowly drifted to this, where people stopped coming, people got anxious and started to transform the worship to be more like this guacamole option than, if you'd had a choir or there had been reverence. And I'm going to link it. It's not going to read the whole thing, but it's really good. Some of you stay because you've been told the changes to worship are necessary steps to bring people to Jesus. That's a lie. That's absolutely true. People don't want to, like, the word itself is sufficient to bring people to Jesus. Right. You need to go out in the world and tell people about Jesus.
Yeah.
And then bring them to church. Some of you stay because you think it's only about preference, and that's also not true.
What's about preference?
The worship is about preference.
Right.
And so if you don't enjoy it anymore, you're just being a jerk and you should go ahead and leave. Or no, you should stay, because it's not about you having your preferences met, but it's actually
more. Well, they'll say they will say worship is about attracting the all of, when we gather, it's not about us, it's about the world.
Yeah.
And so if you're upset that we're having the rock band and the talk about the guacamole, you're the problem.
Yeah. Your preferences aren't being met. Well,
right. They'll kind of shift that to you being selfish rather than you saying this isn't about Christ and this isn't about
right. Whereas worship isn't about preference. Worship is about Christ. So if Christ is not being upheld, then it's not good anymore. Some of you stay because you think it will keep the young people in church, and that's not actually working anymore, if it ever did. Some of you stay because you've been shamed into submission to these lies. And then this is a good one. This is what I was saying before. Some of you are staying because it's the only kind of worship you've ever known. And once you've sort of extracted the reverence out of this sort of, this way of worship has been there for a long time.
Yeah.
But once you remove the reverence, you probably do need something new, but very old. Go to a liturgical church. And then the last one is good. If you've been in a church like this your whole life, it's hard to think about leaving. But if it's not really
honoring to Christ,
then why it's not helpful anymore. Or it's not really.
It's like going to a church that teaches false doctrine. It's not different than that, because the liturgy is doctrine. The worship is doctrine. Doctrine is being communicated in the music and in the the way that worship is performed. And if that doctrine is contrary to the gospel, then there's no reason to stay.
That said, I do agree that you should be careful about leaving a church. You shouldn't because you don't like it anymore. You should really examine
the theological reasons that you're thinking about going.
And if you can push back on pastors who are... Because the other tragedy about this is that this church by the Glades has tons and tons of money, probably.
Yeah.
And so they can put on this wretched light show. But, you know, the churches around here that are trying to do this don't have the resources. And so it's painful to watch it.
We've talked about this before.
It's even more painful to watch it in a small, tiny situation.
There's a church that started up down in Montrose. It's following this model. And whoever started had the money to do all the light show, all of the stuff. And they've been planning around in different places around here. And it's sad because you have these older churches that are just struggling to get by. And then in comes the light show church.
Yeah, and buys them up.
And these smaller churches are trying to compete by doing the same thing, but they're not going to have the money to do it.
Yeah.
So you have a lot of people saying, "Hell, this is the new way to do church," but that new way is only for the wealthy,
right?
Really.
So I would say, if you're in a small church like that, and your pastor is like getting into this idea that everything needs to become a light show, join the elder council or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, go in and argue.
Yeah.
Don't give up. Fight for the little place.
Liturgy doesn't cost any money.
It doesn't. I mean, it can cost a little bit if you want to buy some books.
Oh, right. But you don't have to have.
Glass.
Yeah. You don't have to keep up with the next trend. Like, look. Remember what it was? A PowerPoint was like the big thing in the 90s.
Yeah,
and now, I mean, you better get your digital screen. Don't do PowerPoint anymore.
Should bring back that old timey traditional PowerPoint.
Right.
The other one that I don't know if I sent you this morning, but it was so great, I'm going to link it also, was use going to church as a reason to get out of everything else in your life. That was a really great post. Like, people use everything in their life as a reason to get out of church. Do it the other way around. Church is such a good and important thing. Fight for the church that you're in to keep it from drifting, if possible.
But
then also go to everything in the church. You know, if there's stuff going on, go to it as much as you can. Be there for the pastor.
Yeah.
Try to use your, you know, most small time pastors are like desperate for people to go to church and to have opinions and to care. So don't be a victim who sits by and lets stuff happen, or just, you know, placidly goes in and then leaves as soon as it's over. Go in and have a say get involved. And, because it's you know, life and death for many people, for all of us. So on that note, I think we should talk about this thruple thing, because I think when you are trying to get the thruple to come to church, what is that going to do to your worship? Incidentally, I think the thruple should go to church, but they should there be told that they're wrong. And that they can't be thruple anymore.
It's so interesting. This is going to put to the test the idea that, well, you hear people talking about it in the Church of England right now. Like, okay, we have a doctrine of marriage that precludes having gay marriage, but what do you do when the gay married couple comes in? How do you treat them pastorally? And under that guise of pastoral care, the people want to sneak in.
That was always the thing.
Yeah.
It's all about pastors.
Yes, we have this doctrine, but pastorally, how do you deal with these situations? And even, you know, someone has, I mentioned the Church of England, but the Orthodox Episcopalian pastor of St. Martin's down in Houston.
Yeah.
Wrote an article about the same kind of thing. I said, oh, well, you know, I personally don't agree with gay marriage. I think it's wrong. We won't do it here, but you know, I'll help you find a pastor who'll do it for you. And I now see and love the couples that come in, and we're going to help support them in their relationships, which is not pastoral.
That's not pastoral. Incidentally, one of the key elements for pastoral care is what's now called truth telling. It's another way of saying telling the truth.
Right.
If you're going to lie to people, that's not pastoral. That's not kind.
The most pastoral thing to do is say, look, we love you very much. We hope you stay. But listen, the relationship that you're involved in is sinful. And if you continue in it unrepentantly, you can't enter the kingdom. So here, Jesus loves you. He will forgive you. Please repent and turn to him.
And there. Don't be in this thruple, which is
right.
HGTV
right.
features its first ever thruple on House Hunters. Hashtag representation matters. So that's an important thing, is if you see yourself in something, then you feel like you can go there, which again, that's sort of come into the church. Like the whole, that's what drives this place in the Glades. That's the thing of the thing. The representation matters.
Oh,
that's what people are trying to show in church on stage, is that your brand of music is important to us. When actually, I don't think you should go to church to see a representation of yourself.
To platform your preferences, right?
Right. Like so anyway, do you want me to read part of this?
Yeah.
With 17 seasons under its belt, which means it's jumped the shark many times, House Hunters has made HGTV history on Wednesday when it featured its first thruple, three people in a polyamorous romantic relationship on one of its episodes. Titled Three's Not a Crowd in Colorado Springs, the episode followed Brian, Lori, and Gelly. I guess I'm saying that right.
Yeah, so there was a married couple first. Who is the married couple? Was it Brian and...
Brian and Lori, right. With their children, two children, fell in love with Gelly at a bar.
Hey man, love is love.
And yeah, at a bar. And they exchanged vows.
Well, it's committed. Say yeah, where. So that's good.
Attended by their children.
Wow.
They ended up choosing a house above their budget, as they all loved its view of the surrounding mountains. However, viewers had a lot more to say about their relationship than their new home. Many House Hunter fans praised HGTV for being so progressive and educational.
Progressive, huh?
Yeah, again, not really. That's progressive.
Progressing right back to Genesis, is it 4 or 5? With Lamech and his...
Lamech.
Lamech was progressive.
Zilla and whatever her name is.
Lamech was...
Yeah, like way to go back to the Old Testament, guys.
Right.
Way back.
Right.
He makes them congratulate him for killing someone.
Yeah.
Lamech.
Well, hey, but maybe they can have an abortion and do all the stuff.
So the picture's pretty great. The guy looks like what you might expect. I'm just going to be bigoted here. And it's all fine. They needed
What might you expect? That's interesting.
I mean, he doesn't look like a man who can handle two women. Again, this is like parts of the world when you're going to have two wives, thruple indeed. There's no thruple. You have two wives. Each wife gets her own house. You don't share houses. So like many men in Africa and other places bankrupt themselves because they need that fourth younger wife who's like the age of one of their children that they've had with.
But then they have to provide her a house.
She gets a house. There's actually a great Senegalese movie, which I've been wishing I could watch again. And this man, he has his first wife, who's sort of the wife of his heart. Each wife is younger. Then he gets the second wife, the third wife. He decides to go for the fourth wife. And he's rich, so he's got, each wife has her own mansion, basically. But he's going bankrupt. And at the end of the movie, he just humiliates himself, all the people in the town. He's standing there, and everyone is spitting on him. It's a horrible scene.
Because he's become broke from his desire for a fourth wife.
Yeah. And no one is with him except for the first oldest wife who stands next to him and doesn't go away from him. It's a really tragic, horrible thing. But anyway, he looks kind of like this guy.
Throupling, though, is different than polygamy, though, because polygamy is...
really?
It is.
Polyamory?
Yeah, because it's in polygamy, the women aren't involved with each other.
Right, right.
And polyamory or whatever it is, there's all kinds of...
this looks like it's one hot time. It doesn't look complicated or political or, like, miserable at all.
I just wonder why. I mean, so... This is now a new orientation, though, being polyamorous. It's not you can be oriented toward homosexuality or heterosexuality, or if you're bisexual, the throuple is for you, because then you have.
So have these people come into your guac church, and the first Sunday they go, you tell them that the gospel is guacamole. It's spicy. It's gonna spice up your life. Like,
you'll grab them, they'll be there.
Then, later, you're like, you whisper, really, you're not supposed to do that. Like, eventually never going to have time to whisper.
Just because some people listening might think, now, wait a minute, didn't Abraham have, two wives and a concubine and concubines and all that? Didn't the patriarchs have more than one? Consort,
oh my gosh.
And yes, they did. However, when Jesus talks about marriage in Matthew chapter 19, he doesn't go back to the example of the patriarchs or the model of Isaac or Jacob, or he goes back to the garden and says God intended for God made male and female so that he could bring them together and make them one flesh. And then he goes on to say, what God has joined together, no man should tear asunder, and that you, if you adding any other thing to that is adulterous. So there's no, what seems to have happened is that during the period of the old covenant, at least part of it, God, because our sexual natures were so broken, kind of governed or put limits around the way human sexuality could operate. You know, no same-sex relationships,
thruples.
I'm groping towards thruples. He did not forbid polygamy until later on. And the reason Jesus is very clear about it, he says, look, because this is the new covenant and your hearts are going to be changed and your minds are going to be transformed and your desires are going to be transformed, you can go back and now the model is creation. It's not the same. Abraham.
And also, so this is another thing that I have been in my bonnet about, and that's that the way that you read the Bible is really important. When the way that you read the Old Testament is super important. If you think that everything that's written down on the page is being written there because
you should do that,
it was supposed to, yeah, it's a model for your life.
Right.
You're absolutely reading it wrong. Lots of things are reported in the scripture without, you know, acclaim and praise.
Right.
So when it says that Abraham,
Jacob or Hagar.
Abraham went into Hagar.
Sarah.
Oh, right. Yeah. When Leah and Rachel give Jacob their servants and are like, get children. That's reported.
Yeah.
There's nothing in the text that says, and this God was so delighted with what just happened here. Like, and you'll notice.
Well, it does say he blessed them with children.
Yeah. And he uses that very broken situation to get 12 tribes of Israel out of it in a redemptive, amazing kind of way. But read the text for its own literary value and see that it's like the pain of that is in the lines of the,
where you can see the women just bashing up against each other and
it's
and
miserable and horrible.
The confusion that people make is they confuse a descriptive passage, like, you know, Abraham and Hagar, with a prescriptive,
that you go and do thou likewise. Right.
So the progressive meme, oh, let's have biblical marriage, and they'll, you know,
they'll put up Lamech.
Right. So no, we take our doctrine from the prescriptions, not the descriptions. And so Jesus's words in Matthew 19 are authoritative, and they tell us how to read and understand the nature of the relationship between Abraham and Hagar, or
which is different than sort of taking a modern definition of love with your polyamorous thruple and reading that back into the text, because people try to do that. That's not the same as letting the one text. Well,
we've talked before. Text. In that article you read about the thruple, the one word that's going to get everyone warm and fuzzy is, well, they fell in love.
Yeah.
The man who's married to his wife, they both just fell in love. So what's wrong? Are you standing in the way of love? Isn't God love? But that's, our culture has confused eros with
everything else.
So erotic love with everything else. So when Christians who want to go in this direction say, look, this is love. Love is from God. Love is good. That's what they're doing. They're not taking the biblical notion of love, agape, which is self-giving love for the good of the other. Their understanding is eroticism is of God. And in some sense it is, but within the bounds of marriage, not anywhere else. Real marriage, not thruple.
Not thruple marriage, whatever this is.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we're agreed then. We've dismantled that. I can't think of any. I felt like I had a lot.
Well, we were going to talk about that poll about how long is the Anglican.
How long should the
Twitter poll?
How long?
How long do you preach? And then there's all sorts of opinions about how long should you preach. I'm not sure if we have time to talk about that. We should maybe.
You had thoughts and feelings.
I do. Because, I mean, the majority notion seems to be, you know, 20 minutes is way, way too long. And we need like 12 to 15 minute sermons. And I understand that that's the normal length of the Episcopalian and even ACNA sermon. But what that tells me is that not too many ACNA or Episcopalian people are actually going verse by verse through a text. They're not expositing, because you can't really exposit a text in 10-15 minutes. It's going to take you at least 30. And if you do it well, it could easily take you 40. So
you're just trying to justify your habit of preaching 40-minute sermons.
I am.
Sometimes 44-minute sermons.
But I think it's our church has been deepened by expositional preaching.
Yes.
It has been given life by expositional preaching. And I think if we ever went back to preaching 12-minute homilies, there would be we would empty the pews.
Yeah. A lot of people would go away. And also, because it's actually true. People drive, some people come from 1 minute away and some people come from an hour away. The people who come from an hour away actually don't want, because they've come such a great distance. If you do like a 15-minute thing and then are out of there, it's not worth their time.
Right, right. Like, why would I come this far for that? Make
it worthwhile. The whole morning has to be packed full of rich liturgy, music, preaching, and fellowship, because a lot of stuff happens on Sunday now because of the people who come such a distance. It has to be worth your while, but that's true for the people who live 1 minute away as well.
Right.
It's a full meal that has to carry you. It does carry you through the week.
I was reading an article on North American Anglican about Anglican preaching and why it's so bad often. And he says that, you know, often preachers don't see the sermon as a sacramental act, that while you are you are preaching the word, as Paul says to Timothy, and God is meeting his people there in the sermon. And not your thoughts about politics, your thoughts about social justice, your thoughts about something else, but your exposition of, explanation of, illustration of the actual, of the text of scripture is what God uses. The foolishness of preaching is what God uses to build people up and break their hearts open and all those things.
So I would say, I've been saying this more and more, one of the primary areas, places where discipleship, as an evangelical might try to understand that word, actually should be the sermon on Sunday morning. The weakness of preaching in every denomination means that you end up going outside of the preach moment to get this quote, hashtag discipleship in personal relationships. You end up needing to do like one-on-one quote discipleship. And you also get this, like, I need to peer into this other person's soul and correct them or like guide and lead them. Actually, most of that should happen because the Holy Spirit is working in the lives and the hearts of the people listening to the sermon and directly applying the scripture that's being exposited to the hearts of the listener. Right. And so it's actually a disciple. It's sacramental. It's also discipling.
There's nothing wrong with getting together and talking, discipling. That's not a bad thing.
No, it's not bad, but
that's not the primary weight should be on the actual moment of
on the sermon,
right?
Because you can't see into the heart of another person,
but God can. God and he applies his word to people individually in the moment of.
So then, if you want to get together with people and talk about what God is doing,
right,
or did do in the preached word for both of you, that's very, very useful activity and probably should be done more.
I mean, I agree that some expositional sermons can become like lectures, and that should never be. You shouldn't be a lecture. You're proclaiming something. You're glorifying God and helping people have a glimpse of who Jesus is. So it shouldn't be boring. I agree with that. And if that's what you associate with expositional preaching, then of course you're going to be, I don't think we should do this. And you're going to want a 10-minute 10-minute sermon.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. Sometimes 10 minutes is too long.
We have sat through many 10 to 15 minute sermons. You're like,
this is too long.
And seminary and all other places where we thought, man.
And then there's the famous one somewhere where, you know, the Anglican preacher is deep in his books, in his study, and he gets enraptured, say, by the question of leprosy, and spends 20 minutes describing leprosy in the Bible and every kind of leprosy. And
I didn't get to hear it,
but I heard about it. And it was such a great,
an exposition of leprosy.
Yeah. So that happens. I've heard John MacArthur get really excited about like the kind of shoes the Romans wore.
Right.
And when they went into battle.
Spend a good 10 minutes talking about the
no, stop. You could have summed this up.
Yeah.
Briefly, but that's the nature. I mean, you're always you're never gonna.
I mean, I think we gotta be careful with like other traditions. So, like John MacArthur, he'll preach through a text, but sometimes we're listening to Sunday evening sermons as opposed to Sunday morning sermons. And I think in Sunday evenings, he does more of a Bible study than a sermon.
An actual sermon.
So, where I guess there's more license to go through and say, well, let's look at the shoes the Romans wore and spend.
You should have Bible study where some of that goes on.
Yeah.
But then the sermon is an act of worship, spiritual act of worship that everybody engages in. The hearer, the listener, and the preacher both are. It's the first half of the Eucharistic
part. Yeah.
You can't have the Eucharist really without the proper preaching of the word, because then it will feel like you're eating a dry, dusty cookie, really.
Right.
As opposed to feeding on Christ.
And I don't think you should even have a sermon if there's no communion. I mean, I think when the church gathers, there should always be communion. I know that people sometimes do it once a month or once every quarter or whatever, but
you should have communion every Sunday.
Yeah, because it should at the end of the sermon,
you should have a deep desire to take communion
to be with Christ.
So That was part of the poll is when it's a Eucharist, how long should the sermon be? And the assumption is when it's a Eucharist, you should preach more shortly.
Yeah.
Because the Eucharistic part takes more time and everybody needs to still get out of there in one right. hour. Actually, if there's a Eucharist, the sermon should be longer right. than 10 minutes right. because.
And it's okay to have it's okay to have an hour and a half service. You read some of the, Augustine sermons, Chrysostom sermons, some of those are short, but some of those are long.
Really, really long.
And in addition to the whole liturgy that they were doing in those days. I mean, it was.
And admittedly, they had nothing else to do. They couldn't go to Whole Foods or whatever.
Oh, they needed to. You know, and Augustine's like routinely arguing with his people saying, no, you can't go to the games. No, you can't go watch gladiators kill each other. I know they're happening right now.
They had nothing to do but to sit in church doing nothing. Like their crops, they didn't have to do their crops and they didn't have to like try not to die of the plague right. or whatever.
Right.
Whereas now there's movies and there's Fresh Market and there's yeah. Walk and you can go buy a pair of those green shoes instead of going like the church needs to end quickly so that we can go do all these like, very important things that.
Yeah.
We've talked a really long time.
We have. We had much to say.
I hope that our listener who desired us to talk about the squawk thing feels very happy.
Yeah.
And
we directed all of our talk, everything, even the thruples like, found its way back to the guac.
We've really done like a pretty good job of that. So thank you so much for listening and we'll be back next week.